Nothing But Blackened Teeth by Cassandra Kaw. Chapter 1. How the fuck are you this rich? I took in the old house, the wood ceiling that domed our heads. Time etched itself into the shape and stretch of the Hayne mansion, its presence apparent in even the texture of the crumbling dark. It felt profane to see the place like this, without curators to chaperone us. No one to say, do not touch, and be careful. This was old before the word for such things even existed. That Philip could finance its desecration, lock, stock, no question, and do so without self-reproach, was symptomatic of our fundamental differences. He shrugged, a smile cocked like the sure thing it was his whole life. Come on, it's a wedding gift. They're supposed to be extravagant. Extravagant is matching Rolex watches. Extravagant, I slowed down for effect, taking time between each syllable, is a honeymoon trip to Hawaii. This, on the other hand, this is beyond absurd, dude. You flew us all the way to Japan. First class. And then rented the fucking Imperial Palace, or it's not a palace, it's just a mansion. And I didn't rent the building per se, just got us permits to spend a few nights here. Oh, like that makes this any less ridiculous. Shh, stop. Don't finish. I get it. Philip dropped his suitcases at the door and palmed the back of his neck looking sheepish. His varsity jacket still perfectly fitted to his broad quarterback frame, blazed indigo and yellow where it caught the sun. In the dusk, the letters of his name were glit and glory and good stitching. Poster boy perfect. Everyone craved him like a vice. Seriously, though, it's no big deal. No big deal, he says. Friggin' billionaires. Cat. Have you ever cannonballed into a cold lake? The shock of an old memory is kind of like that. Every neuron singing the bright hosanna, we are here. You forgot about us, but we didn't forget about you. Only one other person had ever said my name that way. Is Lynn coming? I licked the corner of a tooth. No comment. You could just about smell the cream of the lip of Philip's grin. I tried not to cringe, to wince, suddenly beset by an onslaught of sudden emotions. I hadn't spoken to Lynn since before I checked myself into the hospital for terminal ennui. Exhaustion so acute it couldn't be sanitized with sleep. Couldn't be remedied by anything but a twist of a rope tugged tight. The doctors kept me for 6 days and then sent me home, pockets stuffed with pills and appointments and placards advocating the commandments of a safer living. I spent 6 months doing the work, a shut-in committed to the betterment of self, university and my study of Japanese literature, both formal and otherwise shelved temporarily. When I came out, there was a wedding and a world so seamlessly closed up around the space where I stood, you'd think that I was never there in the first place. The door thumped shut and we both jumped, turned like cogs. All my grief riled somewhere else. I swear, if that moment wasn't magic, everything that is good and right, then nothing else in this world is allowed to call itself beautiful. It was perfect. A Hallmark commercial in freeze frame. Autumn leaves swirling against the backdrop of beach and white cheddar. God rays dripping between the rows. Faye's and Talia emerging, arms looped together, eyes only for each other, smiling so hard that all I wanted to do was promise them that forever will always, eternally, unchangingly be just like this. My head jackknifed up. There it was. The stutter of a girl's voice, sweet despite its coarseness, like a square of fabric worn ragged, like a sound carried on the last ragged breath of a falling record player. A hallucination. It had to be. It needed to be.
You heard something spooky?
Said Philip. I strong-armed a smile into place. Yeah. There's a headless lady in the air right there who says she killed herself because you never called. You really shouldn't ghost people, dude. It's bad manners.
His joviality wicked away, his own expression tripping over old memories. Hey, look, if you're still mad about...
It's old news. I shook my head. Old and buried.
I'm still sorry.
I stiffened. You said that already.
I know, but that shit I did, that wasn't cool. You and me, I should have found a better way to end things, and...
His hands fluttered up and fell in time with the backbeat of his confession. Philip's expression caged with the guilt he'd held on for years like a reliquary. This wasn't the first time we'd had this conversation. This wasn't even the 10th, the 13th. Truth was, I hated that he still felt guilty. It wasn't charitable, but apologies don't exonerate the sinner. Only compelled graciousness from its recipient. The words, each time they came, so repetitive I could tune a clock to their angst, sawed through me. You can't move forward when someone keeps dragging you back. I trapped the tip of my tongue between my teeth, bit down, and exhaled through the sting.
Old news, I said. I'm still sorry.
Your punishment, I guess, is dealing with bad puns forever.
I'll take it.
Philip made a bassoon noise deep in his lungs, a kind of laugh, and traded his Timberlands with the pair of slippers he'd bought at the souvenir shop in the airport. It cost him too much, but the attendant, her lipstick game sharp as a paper cut, had thrown in her number, and Philip always folded for wolves in girl skin clothing.
Long as you promise you don't spook the ghosts.
In another life, I had been brave. Growing up where we did, back in Melting Pot, Malaysia, down in the tropics where the mangroves spread dense as myths, you knew to look for ghosts. Superstition was a compass. It steered your attention through thin alleys, led your eyes to crosswalks, filthy with makeshift shrines, offerings and appeasements scattered by traffic. The five of us spent years in relentless pilgrimage, searching for the holy dead in Kuala Lumpur. Every haunted house, every abandoned hospital, every storm drain, to have clasped a body like a girl's final prayer, we sieved through them all. And I was always in the vanguard, torchlight in hand, eager to show the way. Things change. The breeze slouched through the decaying shoji screens. Lavender, mildew, sandalwood, and rotting incense. Some of the paper panels were peeling in strips. Other gnawed to the still vividly lacquered wood. But the tatami mantling the floors... There was so much. Too much of it everywhere. More than even a Haynes Noble house should hold. And all of it was pristine. Store-bought fresh, even. When the centuries should have chewed the straw to mulch, the sight of it itched under my skin, like someone fed those small, black picnic ants through a vein. Somehow got them to spread out under a thin layer of dermis. Got them to start digging. I shuddered. It was possible that someone had come in to renovate. Maybe someone who'd decided that if the manor was going to house five idiot foreigners, they might as well make it a bit more livable. But the interior didn't smell like it had people here. Not for a long, long time. It smelled instead like such an old building. Green and damp and dark and hungry. Hollow as a stomach that had forgotten what it was like to eat. Did someone use this as a summer house?
Philip shrugged. Probably. I don't know. Like, I didn't want to talk about it too much.
I shook my head. Because something about this place doesn't add up.
We're probably not the only customers in destination horror business, said Philip, grinning. Relax.
FaZe whistled, interrupting me.
Yeah, this is the real deal. My man, Philip, you're a gentleman in 6 quarters. Was nothing.
Philip bared a bright, fierce grin at the happy couple.
Just some old-fashioned luck and the family money put to great use. You don't ever quit about that inheritance, do you?
Said FaZe, smile only as far as the spokes of his cheeks, eyes flat. He cupped an arm around Talia's waist.
We know you're rich, Philip.
Come on, dude. That wasn't what I was trying to say. Arms spread, body language open as a house with no doors. You couldn't hate Philip for long.
But FaZe was trying. Besides, my money is your money. Brothers to an end, you know?
Talia was taller, duskier than FaZe. Part Bengali, part Telugu. Legs like stilts. A smile like a Christmas miracle. And when she laughed, low like a note in a cello's long throat, it was as if she'd been the one to teach the world the sound. Talia laid long fingers atop the jut of Philip's shoulder and bowed her head preciously. Don't fight, both of you. Not today.
Who's fighting?
FaZe said in a radio voice. An easy listening tenor, just about south of prime time worthy. Nothing some hard living couldn't fix. Some good cigarettes and bad whiskey. He wasn't much of anything except doughier than ever. Not fat. Not that there was anything wrong with that. But gluttonous almost. Soft as good clay. Beauty and her unfinished pottery. Half molded, still slick. The tips of FaZe's hair jutted out at the nape, dewed with sweat. I felt an immediate guilt at the unkind observation. FaZe was my best friend, and he'd done more than his share taking Talia down from walling me out. She and I made eye contact as the boys bantered, their voices prickling like the hackles of the Doberman, short and stark, animosity panting between the niceness, and Talia's expression congealed with dislike. I stroked a hand over my arm and tried to keep a smile on. A muscle in Talia's jaw went rigid as she cracked her face into a familiar configuration. Her smile, tense, mineral, bracketed with impatience. I didn't think you were actually going to come. Not after everything you had to say about the two of us. Courtesy velveted her voice. Talia peeled from FaZe and strode across the room, closing the distance between us. 2 inches too much. I could smell her. Rose and sweet cardamom.
You two weren't happy,
I said, hands burrowed into my pockets, a slight backward lean to the axis of my spine.
I'm glad that you figured out your differences, but at the time, you were at each other's throats.
Talia had almost 3 inches on me and levered that to her advantage, looming. Your insistence that we break up didn't help?
I didn't insist anything.
I heard my voice constrict, the registers narrow so much every syllable caught and was crushed together into a slurry. I just thought, you nearly cost me everything, Talia said, still staccato in her rage.
I had both your best interests at heart.
Are you sure? Her expression shaded with pity. I glanced at the boys. Or were you hoping to get FaZe back?
We had dated, if you could call it that. 8 weeks, no chemistry, not even a kiss.
And had we been older, our confidence less flimsy, less dependent on the perceived temperature of our reputations, we'd have known to end it sooner.
Something came out of that at least.
A friendship.
Guilt bruised in the shambles of a stillborn romance, but a friendship nonetheless.
A light deepened in the house, blued where it broke into the corridors.
I'm fucking sure of it, and Jesus, I don't want your man," I told her with as much detachment as I could scrounge, not wanting to sell FaZe short, not after all this. "It's been years since we were together, and I don't know what more you want from me. I've apologized. I tried to make it up to you." Talia let the corner of her lips wither. "You could have stayed home." "Yeah, well..." The sentence emptied into a surprised flutter of noise as the two guys, men, barely, and by definition rather than practice, their eagles still too molten, came tumbling back from the periphery. Philip and FaZe laughingly mounted on a shoulder, a half-fireman carry, with the latter's elbow stabbed into the divot of Philip's collarbone. FaZe, he, at first, looked like he might have been grinning through the debacle, but the way his skin pulled upward from his teeth, that said different. It was a grimace, bared teeth restrained by a membrane of decorum. "Put my husband down!" Talia fluttered, reaching for her groom-to-be.
"I can handle it!"
A snarling comeback without an anchor, in fact. Philip could have kept FaZe suspended forever, but he relented as Talia curved a shoulder against him, arms raised like a supplicant. He set FaZe down and took a languid step back, thumbs hooked through his belt buckle. His grin still easy as you please.
"Jackass,"
said FaZe, disgusted by the indignity from himself. "So tell me about this place, Philip," said Talia, voice billowing in volume, filling the room, the house, and its dark. "Tell me this isn't secretly Matsu Castle, because I'll kill myself if it is. I heard they buried a dancing girl in the walls, and the castle shakes if anyone even thinks about dancing near it." The manor seemed to breathe in, drinking her promise. I could tell we all noticed it, all at once. But instead of highlighting it, we bent our heads like this was a baptism.
"The house might hold you to that," I blurted before I could stop myself. And the sheer wrongness of that statement, the weird, puppyish earnestness in its jump from my throat, made me cringe. A long year spent making acquaintances with the demons inside you. Each new day, a fresh covenant. It does things to you. More specifically, it undoes things inside of you. To have to barter for the bravery to go outside, pick up the phone, spend 10 minutes assured in the upward trajectory of your recovery, that the appointments are enough, that you can be enough, that one day this will all be enough to make things okay again. All those things change you. Still, no one looked askance. If anything, the words lit something in their expressions. The last light of the day etching their faces in rough shadows. Talia held my gaze, her eyes cold black water. "Luckily," Philip, and stretching like a dog, long and lazily, completely unselfconscious, scratched behind his ear, a smile crooked on his lips. "This isn't Matsu Castle." FaZe patted Talia's arm.
"Nah, not even Philip could rent out a place like that."
Philip tried on abashment, complete with an honest-to-God, aw-shucks toe-scuffing, but it didn't work. At this point, he'd been homecoming king, class valedictorian, debate captain, chess wonderkind, every type of impressive a boy could hope to be, king of kings in a place of princes. Even when they try, guys like him can't do self-efficating. But they can be good at sports.
"This is better."
I rolled my luggage up against a pillar, slouched carefully against the wood. Despite everything, I was warming to their enthusiasm, partially because it was so much easier to just go along with it. Less lonely, too. Media's all about the gossip of the lone wolf, but the truth is we're all just sheep.
"But what is this exactly?"
said FaZe, ever meticulous when love had a mandrel in his deliberations. His fingers bangled Talia's wrist, and a smile creased from worry.
Well?
Philip gutted the word, unstrung it over 20 seconds.
My guy wouldn't give me a name. He said he didn't want anything on record in case...
Could have just told you over the phone, said FaZe. Philip tapped the side of a finger to his temple. Didn't want it to be a he said, they said thing either. He was a stickler for the rules.
I guess it is cultural, said FaZe, full of knowing.
His mother was Japanese, small-framed and smileless.
Makes sense.
We have a permit for this, though, right? Said Talia, a wobble in her glided prep school inflections.
Yeah, we do. Don't worry about that.
Philip palmed the back of his neck.
Well, sort of. We have a permit allowing us access to the land here. The mansion's sort of a collateral benefit.
Okay. So we don't have a name, began FaZe, counting sins on his fingers. We don't actually have a permit to be here. But we have booze, food, sleeping bags, a youthful compulsion to do stupid shit,
and a hunger for a good ghost story, said Talia.
The late light did beautiful things to her skin, burnished her in gold. What is the scoop on this mansion?
I don't know, said Philip, the sing-song timbre of his voice familiar, the sound of it like a coyote lying about where he'd left the sun. But rumor has it that this was once supposed to be the site of a beautiful wedding. Unfortunately, the groom never showed up. He died along the way.
If you die, said Talia, pinching the curd of FaZe's wrist with her fingers, I'm gonna marry Philip instead, just so you know.
Philip smiled at the proclamation like he'd heard it 10 times before from 10,000 other women, knew every syllable was meant, and would already be true if it weren't for fraternal bonds. And I was the only one who saw how FaZe's answering smile wouldn't climb to his eyes.
I don't think you're allowed to marry your priest, FaZe said, easy as anything. But if you had to get a replacement, I'd rather you pick Kat.
Ugh, I said. Not my type.
I'd rather die an old maid.
No offense, said Talia. None taken. Anyway, said Philip with a clearing of his throat. The bride took her abandonment in stride and told her wedding guests to bury her in the fountain of the house.
Alive?
I whispered. I thought of a girl holding both hands to her mouth, swallowing air when the dirt in her hair and the hems of her wedding dress becoming heavier with every shovel's worth of soil coming down.
Alive, said Philip. She said she had promised to wait for him, and she would. She'd keep the house standing until his ghost finally came home.
Silence placed itself to rest along the house and upon our tongues.
And every year after that, they buried a new girl in the walls, said Philip.
Why? Started FaZe, startling somehow at this revelation.
The fuck would they do that?
Because it gets real lonely down in the dirt, Philip continued, while I held my tongue at the steeple of my mouth. Why do you think there are so many stories of ghosts trying to get people to kill themselves? Because they miss having someone there. Someone warm. It doesn't matter how many corpses are lying in the soil with them. It's not the same. The dead miss the sun.
It's dark down there.
That's...
Talia walked, a hand along FaZe's arm, a gesture that said, look, you have to understand that this belongs to me. Her eyes found mine, liquid and unkind. In that instant, I wanted badly to tell her again that the past was so splaunched in poor choices, you couldn't get FaZe and me back together for bourbon enough to bring New Orleans. But that wasn't the point.
That's pretty fucking metal.
We'll be fine. Freshly certified man of the cloth right here. Philip pounded his sternum with a fist, laughing, and Talia immediately kissed Faze in answer. He took her chuckles in his mouth, grazed each of them with his lips in turn. I stared at the skins of woven straw thatching the floors, shuddered despite myself. I was abruptly dumbstruck by a profound curiosity.
How many dead and dismembered women laid folded in these walls, under these floors, in the rafters that ribbed the ceiling and along the broad steps barely visible in the murk? Tradition insists the offerings be buried alive, able to breathe and bargain through the process, their funerary garments debased by shit, piss, and whatever other fluids we extrude at the cusp of death. I couldn't shake the idea of an eminently practical family, one that understood that bone won't rot where wood might, ordering their workers to stack girls like bricks, arm here, legs there, a vein of skulls weft into the manor's framing, insurance against time when traditional architecture might fail. Might as well. They were here for the long haul. One day these doors would open, and wedding guests would pour through, and there would be a marriage, come the cataclysm of our modern civilization. A house would wait forever until it happened. One girl each year. 206 bones times 1,000 years. More than enough calcium to keep this house standing until the stars ate themselves clean, picked the sinew from their own shining bones. All for one girl. As she waited and waited, alone in the dirt and dark.
Cat?
I blinked free of my fung, fingers clenched around my wrist.
I'm okay.
You sure? Philip cocked a worried look, hair haloed by the slant of owl light.
You don't look like you're fine, is it? Leave it,
said Faze. The joy had gone out of his expression, replaced by concern, a twitch of perceived anger that carried to his teeth, his lips peeling back. I wagged my head, smoothed out a smile. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Cat knows we're here if she needs us.
The look on my face must have been a sight to see, because Philip flinched and ducked out of the room, mumbling about mistakes, cheeks blotching. I ran through my to-do list thrice, counted out choirs, precautions, 1,000 trivialities, until order restored itself by way of monotony. I glanced over, breathing easy again, to see Faze and Talia bent together like congregants, a steeple made of their bodies, foreheads touching. It was impossible to miss the cue. Exit stage anywhere. So I followed the shutter pop of Philip's new camera, to where he stood in the antechamber, painted by the evening dusk colors, gold and pink. A molting of dust spiraled in the damp air, glinting palely where the particles caught in the cooling sun. At some point, the roof here had fissured, letting the weather slop through. The floor underneath was rotten green, where mold and ferns and whorls of thick moss had taken root in the mulch.
Sorry.
I shrugged. There were wild flowers by the lungful, swelling at Philip's feet.
It's fine.
His eyebrows went up. A bird shrilled its laughter. Through the wound in the roof, I saw the flash of many colors, and the teal of a feathered throat. Philip stretched, remembrant in high definition.
Cat.
You were just worried about a friend. It happens.
Yeah, but
I'm not gonna throw myself off a building because you were trying to be nice. That's not how it works.
I swallowed. Okay, just tell me what you need, all right? I don't always know the right thing to say. I mean, I'm okay at some things, but
like women,
I thought. Like being a star. Like being loved, being hungered for. Philip excelled at enticing want, particularly the kind that tottered on the border of worship. Small wonder he was so inept at compassion sometimes. Every religion is a one-way relationship. To our right, a half-opened fusman. The opaque panel on the floor to the ceiling slid noiselessly on its rail when I pushed. That opened into a garden. A neat square of emerald, bracketed by vernals. An algae-swallowed pool at its heart. The foliage crawled with red hydrangea, dead men's flowers. I ran my hands through my hair. I was suddenly irrevocably exhausted, and the thought of having to exercise Philip's guilt again to ensure him that he wasn't a bad man nauseated me. In lieu of comfort, I groped for Anades. When did you date Talia? Was it after or while we were seeing each other? Cat? A laugh startled from him. I don't mean that as an accusation. It doesn't matter. I was just wondering. I stroked a finger along the bamboo lattice, came out with dust, decomposing plant materials, and an oiliness that I couldn't place.
About a month after. But we weren't exclusive or anything.
You never did like the exclusive thing, no.
It's not that.
So much sincerity in those gold blue eyes. Crowns of honey around black pupils.
It's just we were kids. We're still kids. These relationships won't last us into adulthood. Most of them won't. Talia and Faze, that's something else. Anyway, when I'm older, I'll settle down, but these are the best years of my life, and I don't want to waste them shackled to a person I won't like at 30.
His gaze became pleading.
You understand, right?
Said Philip, yearning for affirmation. I'm just wondering if Faze knows that you two were together.
He stilled. That's on Talia to tell him, not me.
I considered my next words. In case he doesn't know, I feel like you should make it a point to pretend that you two weren't ever an item.
Guileless, the reply. Why?
I thought of Faze and his teeth bared and blunt and bitter. Faze might not like suddenly finding out that you slept with his fiancée.
He's an adult. And male. He's not going to care about someone else's sexual history.
Better safe than sorry, Philip. I paused. Also, fuck you. Faze is an adult who can make his own decisions. But you're a kid who shouldn't commit yet?
Hey, people mature at different speeds.
Jesus. Fine. Just make sure you don't let Faze know that you used to sleep with his wife-to-be.
Okay.
Philip put his hand out, his blunt nails grazing a fold of my shirt.
For you.
I shoved my shoulder away. Don't do that. Something below the crossbeams of my lowest rib clenched as I absorbed him. The crescendo of his face in a silhouette. His faultless smile. Nothing ever said no to those cheekbones. You know you're supposed to ask.
Sorry, I forgot.
Glib was the first word out of a babe's milk-wet mouth, one shoulder raised, then dropped. My gaze drifted, moved until it came to rest on the fusma. There were images of marketplaces teeming with black-lipped housewives, raccoons darting in between. I squinted. No, not raccoons. Tanuki, with their scrotums dragging behind them. Someone had even painted the fine hairs that made it a point to emphasize how the testes sat in their gunny sacks of tanned skin.
Somehow the profanity of the art repulsed me less than the undergrowth in which Philip stood. The ferns grew knee-high, curled against his calves like VeggieTale cats.
"So, how many ghosts do you think we're gonna find?"
Philip said, warming up to the thought of small talk.
"At least one."
I thought about the corpses. I thought about how many girls were buried beneath us, foreheads together, bodies fused in a cat's cradle of curled legs and clutching arms.
"Yeah, she's probably like the Queen of the Damned or something. I wonder what she'd look like."
He untangled his hands through the air, molding his palms around the voluptuous rise and dip of an imaginary silhouette.
"Bet she's hot."
A portrait of the deceased, the owner of that voice, rose into focus in my mind's eye. A round face, wide with the cordillera of her cheekbones, but otherwise gaunt. The flesh wilted by hunger and worms, her complexion waxen. Hair waterfalling, ragged and black, still impaled in places by sharp golden pins. "I don't think you can be hot after so many years dead."
"Have some imagination. Sure, the corporeal body might have suffered from decomposition, but her spiritual manifestation is probably something else."
"You're crass, Philip." My laugh sounded wet, thick, false, forced. But Philip didn't notice, grinning wide. I couldn't stop thinking about what might have been under his feet.
"Just a hot-blooded male," he confessed. "Doing what hot-blooded males do."
Cute. The edge of a lip went up further than demure. "Promise me you'll rein it in."
"I promise I'll try."
He fisted a hand and placed it over his heart. An admiral's salute, spine and shoulders lancing straight. That grin again. That cocksure, state-funded, presidential candidate smirk. "Talk to the hand." I threw a raised palm in his direction and looked back to the Fusuma. It wasn't just Tanuki on exhibit. There were other yokai. It was all yokai. A veritable parade. Kitsune in elaborate tomosode, tails curling with questions. Ningyo crawling from the jeweled sea. Kappa towering oni, negotiating for baskets heaped with cucumbers. Everywhere, every last brush-painted face in sight. Even the housewives. Some with eyes, some only with lips. Some gaping smiles sliced into place. Every last one of them. All fucking yokai.
"Just trying to make you laugh, Kat. That's all."
"That's what he said." He swept his fingers from his eyes, palmed his chest, with both hands exposing some grotesque and false despair.
"Ugh, you wound me."
"Your ego wounds you. I was just its instrument." And he laughed then, like it didn't matter. Like it couldn't matter. Not for him. Not ever. Not when so much of the world waited, eager to tithe him with everything for a kiss. Philip wouldn't hinder himself with a grudge. Not with the blessed largeness of his straight, white, rich boy life.
"You're good people, Kat. You know that, right? And good people deserve happiness."
"I think that's overstating things,"
I told him with a half smile for a tip.
However tedious the best wishes, I couldn't fault his intent. More than anything else, I was tired. Tired of being unhappy. And even more tired of feeling sorry for the fact that I was unhappy. It was easier to agree than it was to argue. What with the immovable object that was Philip's faith in his worldview. But I appreciate the statement.
Sunomatsu yama nami mo konamu.
A whisper. so quiet the cerebellum wouldn't acknowledge its receipt. The words were drowned by the reverb of Faze's voice calling, an afterimage, an impression of teeth on skin. We exited the room, the future falling into place behind us, like a wedding veil, a morning call. Like froth on the lip of a bride drowning in soil.